This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. August 28th marks the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. You don't have to say any more than that for folks to know these days what that march was about. But at the time, what was going on? The lone surviving speaker from that day is Atlanta Congressman John Lewis. At the time, he was 23 years old. He was the national chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Congressman Lewis joins us now. Congressman, welcome back. Good to have you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
You met with President Kennedy, you and other march organizers, back in June of 63. He was not entirely enthusiastic, was he? What did he say to you, and did you yourself say anything to him about the march?
Well, the president said to us as a group that he didn't think we should be bringing hundreds and thousands of people to Washington. He thought there would be violence and chaos and disorder, and we would never get a civil rights bill through the Congress. But it was A. Philip Randolph, our spokesperson, the dean of black leadership, a labor leader, civil rights and human rights leader, spoke up and said, "Mr. President, this would be an orderly, peaceful, nonviolent protest." And the president responded by saying, "I think we're going to have some problems." But we left that meeting with President Kennedy, and we came out on the lawn of the White House, and we spoke to the media and said we had a meaningful and productive meeting with the President of the United States.
People now think, oh, there was this sort of unified flow to everything that happened. But at the time, there was a great deal of debate about what tone to strike and what to say and what not to say, wasn't there?
President Kennedy, some of us felt, had presented a bill that we thought didn't go farther enough. As a matter of fact, I said in my original speech that I thought it was too little and that it was too late, that it was not anything in the proposed legislation that would protect women and children involved in peaceful, nonviolent protests.
You also had a phrase in there that said, "We will march through the South, through the heart of Dixie, the way Sherman did. We shall pursue our own scorched earth policy and burn Jim Crow to the ground nonviolently." That phrase was taken out. What did people say to you about that phrase, and why did you in the end decide to take that out, even though it was a call for something bigger than the civil rights legislation at the time?
Well, several leaders of the march came to me, including Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and A. Philip Randolph, two men that I love and respected. And Dr. King said to me, "John, that doesn't sound like you. Can we change that?" And Mr. Randolph, A. Philip Randolph, said, "John, we come this far together. Let's stay together. Can you delete that?" And the Archbishop of the Diocese of Washington was supposed to give an invocation, and he threatened not to give the invocation if we didn't delete the phrase that included marching through the South the way Sherman did. And for the sake of unity and staying together and just keeping us all focused, I made the decision to change it. And rather than saying march through the South the way Sherman did nonviolently, I said we'll march through certain cities, not just in the South, but throughout our country.
Looking back on it, do you think that was the right thing, to take that line out? Do you have any regrets about that at all? Because it's a very passionate, colorful line.
I don't have any regrets. I wanted unity that day. I wanted all of us to be together. And I was looking out for a unified effort for all 10 speakers and the 10 leaders to be reading from the same book.
As you were walking toward the Lincoln Memorial and you realized hundreds of thousands of people were walking with you, what went through your mind? It must have been, for all this planning, you probably couldn't imagine the scope of what was happening.
Well, I tell you, as we were walking and seeing hundreds and thousands of people, I knew then it was going to be more than 50 or 60,000 people, and I saw all of these young people getting up in the trees to get a better view, and I saw many, many people with their shoes off and their feet in the reflection pool trying to cool off. And it was just a moving sea of humanity, and I was gratified, and I think all of the leadership, we all were so pleased, because we thought maybe we would have 50 or 60,000 people, but the estimate was 250,000. And when I look at the photographs today, I think it was more than 250,000. I think it probably was a 500,000 people.
And it was that I Have a Dream section of that speech that, of course, made it the historical moment that it became. Would it have been as big, as effective as it was, without that section of that one speech that he inserted really at the suggestion of Mahalia Jackson, who was standing right near him?
Well, that section of the speech was so appealing to the hearts, minds, and spirit of so many people. It was all-inclusive, and he was inviting all of us, and it didn't matter whether we were black or white, Latino or Asian American or Native American, to share and participate in this dream, that you become part of this dream to make America better. And I would say 50 years later, people all over the world know Martin Luther King Jr. They know something about the March on Washington. And many young people, many young children know the speech, and they can recite it, I Have a Dream.
Do you remember what went through your mind and what you were feeling when you heard him start to preach that way and you were looking out at this sea of people?
As I was seated there, listening to him and watching him, I was more and more inspired that we had to go back to the heart of the Deep South and work. He lifted us, and we were ready, especially the young people, to come back to Georgia, to go back to Alabama, to go back to Mississippi and work, because we had been lifted and inspired by this man. And when he got to the point and passed I Have a Dream and started talking about let freedom reign, from Stone Mountain of Georgia, Lookout Mountain, Tennessee, and from every mountain in Molehill in Mississippi, we were ready to march again, not just in Washington, but throughout the South and all over America.
But, of course, the Civil Rights Bill was not passed until after President Kennedy had been assassinated. Did you think at the time of the march, all right, now things are going to happen? And were you disappointed or disillusioned that it didn't happen right away?
No, during the march and shortly after, I was very hopeful and very optimistic. But Dr. King taught us to take the long, hard look and to remember that our fight, our struggle was not just for one day or one march, but it was a struggle of a lifetime. So after the assassination of President Kennedy, it was a sad and dark time in our country, for those of us in the movement. And just before he was assassinated, 2 months earlier, had been the bombing of a church in Birmingham where Fuller Girls was killed. But we didn't become bitter. We didn't become hostile. We didn't lose hope. We kept a faith. And I think we were true to the calling of Martin Luther King Jr., and true to the mission of President Kennedy.
Atlanta Congressman John Lewis, the last survivor of the series of speakers at the March on Washington 50 years ago, August 28th. Congressman Lewis, thanks so much for giving us this time. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, sir.